Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel, an article from December 15th, 2021. Annual live nativity event returns this weekend with volunteer cast and live animals. By Big Bend Sentinel, December 15th, 2021, 2:23 p.m. Alpine, the annual live nativity, sponsored by Michael's Mountain Ministry, will take place Saturday, December 18th through Sunday, December 20th. Beginning at 7 p.m. each night, the live nativity comes alive at the stable area between the Sel Ross Outdoor Theater and Coconut Lodge, just off the loop road next to the Alpine Golf Course. Michael's Mountain is proud to welcome a new member to the All-Star cast this year as Pumpkin, part of the Wasserman Ranch Donkey Herd, will make her first appearance as Mary's faithful steed. Pumpkin stood on the fringe of the production last year as she watched her stablemate, Chewbacca, in his 10th and final year of being the nativity donkey. Pumpkin is also welcomed by the small herd of goats brought by Paul and Rachel Gribenow of Alpine. Relying totally on volunteers as the cast, the live nativity has been a part of Big Bend's holiday tradition for over 30 years. Anyone of any age can participate as an angel, shepherd, wise man, scribe, or other part. Just be at Coconut Lodge between 6 and 6:30 p.m. to robe up and receive instructions. There are no lines to learn, and all costumes are provided. Michael's Mountain welcomes help in unloading the trailer on December 17th, stuffing hay in the stable, setting up Herod's Palace, and helping get the path to Bethlehem spiffed up, and serving refreshments each evening. Again, all ages are invited and encouraged to come be a part of this beautiful reenactment of the Christmas story. Bring a chair or blanket to add to your viewing comfort and enjoy coffee, hot chocolate, and homemade cookies after each performance. All performances are free. Please call Karen McGuire at 432-386-3071 for more information. The Texas State University System nor Sel Ross State University sponsor or endorse the live nativity. Fort Davis Elementary School is one of two Texas schools selected for National Busload of Books Tour. Fourth grade teacher Amanda Fisher of Fort Davis successfully applied for her school to be one of just 52 stops on the Busload of Books Tour, which promises to bring a book to every student, teacher, support staff, and administrator at Dirks Anderson Elementary in December 2022. Photo courtesy of Fort Davis ISD. Big Bend Sentinel, December 15th, 2021, 3:33 p.m. Fort Davis. Dirks Anderson Elementary is on the map. The Fort Davis School has been chosen as a stop on the Busload of Books tour. Supported entirely by private donors, illustrator-author married couple Robbie Bear and Matthew Swanson and their four kids will spend 1 year visiting Title I schools in every state. This free enrichment opportunity was highly competitive. Out of over 300 applications, only 52 were selected. One school per state, plus Washington, D.C., and with two schools selected in Texas due to its size. During their visit to Dirks Anderson, Bear and Swanson will give one free brand new book to each elementary school student, teacher support staff, and administrator. They will also provide two interactive presentations about creativity, writing, and art. One for pre-K through first grades, and one for second through fifth grades. Additionally, a select group of upper elementary students will eat lunch with Bear and Swanson, during which time they can discuss careers in writing, art slash media, publishing, and more. The visit is scheduled for the last week of school in December 2022. To see more about their plans, go to https://robbiandmatthew.com/busload-of-books/. A generous grant from the Higher Education Foundation led Dirks Anderson teacher Amanda Fisher to this competition. With her recently awarded grant money, Fisher updated her fourth grade classroom library primarily from First Book Marketplace, a nonprofit that sells heavily discounted books exclusively to Title I teachers and staff. It was First Book Marketplace, which is partnering with Bear and Swanson, that invited Fisher to apply. Fisher, who received her doctorate in Slavic languages and literature from Indiana University in 2019, hopes this visit will electrify all students, especially those who lean in the creative direction. One of the most exciting parts about teaching fourth grade, Fisher claims, is when students find and develop their own sense of literary creativity. I've had students who have reading disabilities, yet demonstrate amazing writing skills and knowledge of text, illustration interactions, she says. It's an honor to get to encourage that creative energy. So too, Fisher notes, is aiding young readers in developing individual literary taste. She regularly spends some of her free time researching which books would appeal to which students. While she enjoys finding books that grow her seasoned readers, nothing is quite as thrilling as hearing a reluctant reader say, "I love this book." Perhaps after the Busload of Books tour, a few more Dirks Anderson students will be exclaiming that very same thing. Presidio High School students strike deal with city to keep recycling center alive. Photo by Sam Karras. Presidio High School's Project Home Leaf hangs new signage at the Presidio Recycling Center. From left to right, Alfonso Sainz, Angela Ocon, Adelina Porras, Clarissa Villagran, Ramon Rodriguez Aranda, Kenia Hernandez, Laisa Arevalo. By Sam Karras, December 15th, 2021, 3:15 p.m. Presidio, down on the city's south side where the main roads become dirt and tidy homes turn into blocks and blocks of cattle pens, there's a concrete slab, a commercial baler, and what looks like an abandoned railway car. It's next to the lot where the city dump takes piles of tires and worn-out city vehicles, including the shell of a former Presidio ambulance resting after years of heavy use. It's the kind of place you'd start to wonder if you'd stumbled upon a group of teenagers. You'd assume they were up to no good. That's not the case with the Project Homeleaf kids, who have gathered here after school to try to revive the city's recycling center. Project Homeleaf is an environmental science club at Presidio High, started by Ramon Rodriguez Aranda and his friends who grew up in Presidio and have known each other all their lives. Recently, they were responsible for planting 25 trees in town with some help from Jim Martinez, and City Water Works Director Cesar Leyva. More trees are on their way next year, and they're hoping to build a town greenhouse and community garden, too. With the sun setting behind them, Angela Ocon, Adelina Porres, and Kenia Hernandez knelt on the concrete slab, working to make sure plastic boxes and tin cans stuck to a piece of plywood. They were making new signs to mark the entrance of the recycling center, a city service whose use has waxed and waned since the program was launched in 2012. Hernandez is the artist of the group. They decided to go with the nailed-on recyclables instead of drawing out accepted items for a more engaging three-dimensional presentation. She sourced most of the materials, and her only regret is not putting a coat of varnish over the paint on the signs to protect them from fading in the sun. The recycling is a relatively new Project Homeleaf cause. At the Presidio City Council meeting held September 20th, city officials introduced a budget item to shutter the facility, with concerns that it cost too much money relative to how many people were actually using it. The Project Homeleaf crew, along with Presidio resident Elvita Hermosillo, showed out in force. They gave powerful speeches testifying to the center's importance. Not only had local recyclers been visiting the facility weekly for over 10 years, they felt it sent an important message to the world. Presidio is a progressive city. Presidio is a green city. For all of the kids, including Aranda, a budding local activist, it was their first encounter with city politics. Ms. Hermosillo contacted us, he remembered. She was like, I know you guys are here really trying to make things happen in Presidio, so can you come to City Council and help us out? Most of the Project Homeleaf students have known Hermosillo since the first grade, when she made an Earth Day presentation as a special projects employee of Presidio ISD that changed their lives. Even as high school juniors looking toward going to college and leaving home, they all still talk about that day 10 years earlier when they were introduced to the concept of caring for the Earth in a fun and engaging way. It was so much fun because we didn't just stay in the classroom. We planted seeds. We had a day where we all rode our bikes to school and had bike races. We did a color run where everyone got to slide around in the mud, Hermosillo remembered. The trick is creating enough excitement in the classroom that students will go home and share the underlying message with their adults. The little ones go home and tell their parents, and that's how you get everyone to start adopting the behavior. Listening to Hermosillo talk about the recycling center's early days, it's not hard to imagine how Presidio kids got hooked for life on the mantra of reduce, reuse, recycle. When this all started in 2012, we were just trying to get attention, she said. At that time, the group had a pop-up recycling program on O'Reilly Street where they'd flag people down and ask for cans and cardboard boxes. They distributed flyers around their neighborhoods and hustled their teachers for classroom recyclables. One summer, we went to Porter's in the parking lot across from City Hall, and we had a flash mob. We choreographed the dances and everything. As the program grew and moved into its current-day facility, Hermosillo and her supporters wanted to model Presidio's recycling center after its counterparts in Alpine and Fort Davis. A cardboard crusher from the school made its way over to the lot, then a larger compactor, whose contents are transported to Austin whenever it gets full. Despite having a growing stable of equipment, someone still needed to sit under the shade structure and physically staff the facility. There were some issues keeping volunteers, Aranda explained. They ended up shutting it down for about 4 years, and then when the new city budget came out, they were going to close it permanently. City officials like Mayor John Ferguson were surprised by the vocal reaction to the prospect of the recycling center closing its gates for good, but heartened by the kids' intentions to grow the program. This facility is just a small little facility, but it's planting a seed, he explained. These students are demonstrating that their generation really needs to have a sense that this is not optional. This is something that needs to be done moving forward. Project Homeleaf struck a deal with the city. Keep the facility open, and they would be responsible for staffing it. The center's new hours are after school on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 4:30 to 6 p.m. In the summer, they'll probably be open later, but Hermosillo doesn't want to keep the kids out after dark. The cost to the city is fairly minimal, Ferguson said. It's in the neighborhood of $500 a month, and a fee involved when the compactor gets picked up. When you look at that and what we're looking to accomplish, it's like, hey, you've got to have some skin in the game. It's not just going to happen on its own.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, December 23rd, 2021. Berrigan's to Manage City Theater by Nathan Heuer. Renting a theater has long been an aspiration for the Berrigan family. Growing up, Colette and her son Tristan were passionate moviegoers that fully supported Stockton Entertainment's theater when it was in operation 4+ years ago. We loved going to the theater when it was here. We've always loved to go to movies. That's one of my favorite things to do, and when the theater stopped here, that was something we wanted to bring back and give back to the community. It provides a place for all the kids and their families to go to watch movies. I've always loved theater, like the high school theater. My mom and I have always loved going to the movies, Tristan said. Fast forward to 2020, and the city of Fort Stockton bought the plaza. That action ignited the hope of the Berrigans to bring back the theater. Once we knew that the city had bought it, we were definitely interested in what they were going to do with it. The family officially received that opportunity on December 13th at the City Council's regular meeting. The Berrigan family put in a bid to manage the theater, and the City Council unanimously approved the proposal. This is something Tristan has wanted since he was in third grade, Colette said. We've been ready and helping the city. We're doing it for the benefit of the community and something we enjoy doing. The closest theater we have in this area is Alpine. We'd like people to come back to Fort Stockton and keep that money here. It was a really good thing when it was here. Colette hopes the theater is fully operational for full-price movies by March. One of the most important renovations that needed to be done to the facility was the sound system. That issue was addressed at the City Council's meeting this month. The Council approved a $54,600 sound system that will replace the one that is currently being used. The place needs some work. The sound needs replaced. It needs a lot of deep cleaning. It was just sitting the last 4 years. As soon as we're able to get in there, we have a lot of ideas. The Berrigans want to provide the complete movie experience, from concessions to first-run movies. Colette said their initial plans will be to show movies Thursday through Sunday, with one showing on Thursday, two on Friday, and three on Saturday and Sunday. We're wanting to bring first-run movies to Fort Stockton, as well as having retro movies. My students want to see Ferris Bueller's Day Off on the big screen. Some want to see Star Wars on the big screen. Bring some of those back that we grew up with, but they never saw. That's what our goal is. It's incredibly expensive, but it'll be worth it if the town and the surrounding community supports it. To help them early on with operating expenses, Councilman Reuben Falcon made the motion to not only approve their bid, but to allow them to manage the facility rent-free for the first 6 months. Councilwoman Pam Paleo seconded the motion. As for concessions, the Berrigans are in the process of applying for their food and beverage license in order to serve a full inventory of items. Tristan and Colette are also looking into serving alcohol, possibly draft beer and wine-based margaritas. We're looking to getting a food and beverage license where there are certain movies we might be able to serve beer and wine and wine-based margaritas. We want to have stuff for all the ages. In the past few months, they have volunteered along with students to help operate the theater for city-funded movie showings that are free to the public. The volunteer opportunity has enabled an avenue for students to accumulate their required time for scholar hours, National Honor Society hours, Texas Leadership hours with the chamber, and confirmation hours. I had about 20 students that have come in and helped. We have so much fun with them. The theater has shown Adam's Family, Love and Basketball, Home Alone, and the most recently, Elf, on December 20th. The theater also plans to show The Grinch and Polar Express this holiday season. FSISD announces personnel changes by Nathan Heuer. The Fort Stockton Independent School District provided information regarding personnel changes at their regular meeting on December 13. Robert Knight, the Fort Stockton Intermediate Assistant Principal, was listed as one of two retirements within the district for the month of December. Knight was awarded a plaque for 10 years of service at the district's Christmas party on December 16. High school custodian Roberto Ramirez also retired this month. Five new employments were listed, including two teacher aides, a custodian, and two food production staff members. Veronica Sanchez moved from a food production staff member to an instructional aide at Alamo. Tana Lee Cabrera was hired as an instructional at Apache Elementary. Elizabeth Gonzalez and Gabdali Melendez were hired as food production staff employees. Jose de la Cruz will replace Ramirez as custodian. Resignations included Kiara Melendez, Natalie Monzon, Blanca Solis Alvarado. The district's school board meeting is scheduled for January 24th. Council makes appointments and reappointments by Megan Waring. New and familiar faces were appointed to city boards last week. The Fort Stockton City Council approved the appointment and reappointment of several members to various boards throughout the city during their regular meeting on December 13th. Boards decided upon included Animal Control Advisory Board, Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful Board, Convention and Visitors Bureau Board, Historical Landmark Commission Board, and Substandard Building Committee Board. Earlier this year, the City Council approved a decision to have a total of 11 members serving on the CVB board after the Downtown Association was dissolved in its entirety. When the Downtown Association didn't have enough members to appoint to the board, City Manager Frank Rodriguez said they decided to attempt to increase the number of board members so the CVB could provide oversight with ideas for downtown. Technically, the CVB board has always been for downtown, but now with these added members, it's allowing them to continue to do that. The Downtown Association did not have enough members to continue with the board. Fort Stockton Community Theater received an early Christmas present again this year. The theater group won top of its category in the Citibank Community Rewards Program for the second year in a row and will receive $4,000. Theater friends and families could vote online every hour from November 7 to 12, and the nonprofit group winning the most votes in each of six categories was rewarded. Four other nonprofits in each category were awarded money also. The organization receiving the most votes overall was awarded an extra $3,000. Fort Stockton Community Theater will try again next year for that grand prize. The money will be spent to cover price increases in equipment that was listed to be purchased with the FMH Foundation grant that was awarded in November. FSCT thanks everyone who took time out of his or her day to cast an email vote. This proves once again that it's the people who put the community in Fort Stockton Community Theater. Storytelling Workshop Set. Fort Stockton Community Theater invites adults, high school age and older, to participate in a storytelling workshop conducted by Sue Roseberry on Saturday, January 22nd. Sue Roseberry conducted a storytelling workshop earlier in the year for young people, and it was so successful that several people asked for a workshop for adults. Our stories are important to share with others and pass down through the generations. Sue teaches strategies and techniques for telling your story in a meaningful, dynamic, fun way. Google Sue Roseberry to read about her many talents and plan to spend Saturday, January 22, with other adults telling and hearing great stories. The workshop will be from 9 to 4 at the Nelson Street Theater and will cost $20, which includes lunch. 40 people may register, but 20 people must be registered by noon on Saturday, January 15th, in order for the workshop to be provided. Call Alice Dirksen at 336-3180 for more information and to register. A Look at People Traveling Through Fort Stockton by Jeremy Gonzalez. More often, a Fort Stockton resident can distinguish a traveler passing through town. This past Monday, it was easy for locals to identify a group of foreigners as they were spotted dancing in the Stripes parking lot off Dixon Boulevard. "We were just dancing to stretch our legs," said Anna with a laugh. "After hours on the road, we'll put some music on and have a little dance session or do some squats. Today was just dancing and some lunges." The group pulled into town after 2 days of exploring the trails at Big Bend. With snacks and drinks in hand, the friends appeared re-energized to get back out on the road. "We're headed back home to Austin," said Trevor, after taking a swig of Gatorade. "We stopped at that taco place, which was pretty good. It was called Tacos OJ. We also ate at Chila's Burritos and saw the disc golf course down at the park. There's so much potential for disc golf here." Squatting down with a taco from the Stripes gas station, William steadily poured salsa verde over his food with the concentration of a gourmet chef. "I feel absolutely starved," he said, not sparing a drop of salsa. "This is like a celebration spreading of salsa for me. I was so hungry in the car that I got like a whole feast. This town is very convenient." The group shared that a handful of them had been to both Marfa and Alpine, but were mostly interested in West Texas for the scenic beauty of Big Bend. "We also stop in Fort Stockton, though. We went to the courthouse last time, looked around, and that was cute. This place has a lot of food and gas options." Coddling a warm burrito wrapped up in foil, John joined the conversation with one statement: "Fort Stockton is a lot colder than it looks."
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, December 23rd. MEDC applies for FMH grant to cover broadband extension. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Monday, the Monahans Economic Development Corporation Board of Directors approved a grant application for the F. Marie Hall Foundation grant application. The grant, if approved, will provide $1 million for the broadband extension. MEDC Director Ashley Adalto said, quote, "Approval for the grant requires a site visit, which is set up for January 13th, and the board should know a decision in February," end quote. Phase 1 construction of approximately 6 miles of fiber infrastructure began on December 15th, and construction should wrap up in February. Board members attending the meeting were Brian Franks, Richard Irwin, Eddie Nelms, Leticia Rodriguez, and Hal Upchurch. In other business, board members heard bids on striping for Monahans Parkway and the school access roads. The board approval to begin the bid process in September. The city has agreed to help with the signage, and Encore will be tasked with the lighting on those same streets. MEDC received 2 bids for the project, from Linear Traffic Markings and from Fast Lane Striping. The bid from Linear came in at $38,000, and Fastline was $131,000, and based on the recommendation from Maverick Engineering, the board chose Linear for the project. In final actionable agenda items, the board rejected a bid from Brett Construction for the Monahans Parkway intersection flooding conveyance for $344,000. Quote, "The bid came in 3 times higher than expected, and based on the recommendation of Maverick Engineering, we will attempt to seek additional bids for the project," Adalto said. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable totaling $11,000, which included $535 in dues, $1,368 for bid advertisements, and $8,730 for payroll, salaries, phone, insurance, maintenance, and fuel. The financial report reflecting a balance of $2.05 million in available funds and minutes of the November 15th regular meeting were approved. Ward Memorial Hospital Board approves consulting agreement. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Meeting for the last time for 2021 on Monday night, the managers of Ward Memorial Hospital approved a consulting agreement with Healthcare Consulting Services to assist the hospital to review agreements to help WMH obtain more favorable contract terms. The consultant will review executed agreements to check for potential language issues, negotiate favorable contract terms, provide a summary matrix on all contracted health plans, and facilitate appropriate appeals to resolve continued payment issues. WMH will pay $1,300 per month for this service. Managers present for the meeting were Dr. John Fawcett, Larry Hunt, Angel Fuentes, Jeff Burdick, Tommy Escamilla, Gerald Carlson, and Frank Heslin. Manager Lisa Stewart was not present. Accounts payable, as presented by Controller Belinda Hinojos, total $409,000 was approved. Leading items paid were employee insurance, $122,000, TCDRS retirement, $82,000, CPSI, $17,000, and professional fees, such as anesthesia, $31,000. Budget amendments were also approved. A sum of $75,000 from equipment greater than $5,000 and $18,600 from nursing agency fees was transferred to purchases services, $85,000, maintenance and software, $2,000, payroll deduction, $5,000, sundry, $100, and travel, $1,500. CEO Leticia Rodriguez said that the $1,500 amendment for travel was to pay travel expense for an on-site visit for CPSI. Quote, "Anytime they come on site, they bill us travel expenses," end quote. Several personnel changes were approved unanimously. The next meeting of the managers will be held at 6:15 p.m. on January 6th in the Physical Therapy Building at 420 South Ike Street. After 2 months of gains, sales tax down. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Sales tax receipts for December continues its up and down swings as Monahans dropped by about $53,000 from November and $74,000 from November 2020. Most entities tracked by the Monahans News experienced similar receipts. After 2 months of increases, Monahans received $300,000 for the month, down from $353,000 last December and $373,000 last December, a drop of 14.8%. For the year, Monahans has received $3,600,000 compared to $4,100,000, a decline of 11%. City Manager Rex Thee said, quote, "We continue the roller coaster ride on monthly allocations of sales tax. The December allocation is $300,000, which is a decrease of $73,000, or 19%, from last month. December's allocation is also down $52,000, or 14%, from December last year. Calendar year-to-date sales tax is still down 11%. That's $464,000 less than this time last year. While this dip is disappointing, we can remain optimistic that sales overall have increased over the past year or two," end quote. Receipts in the rest of the county were mixed. Grand Falls, Thorntonville, and Wickett all posted strong gains, while Piute saw a slight decline. Grand Falls receipts were more than four times the money received in December of last year. The community received $20,000 compared to $3,500, an increase of 463%. That amount pushed Grand Falls into the black for the year with a total of $77,000 compared to $58,000 last year, a gain of 32.7%. Thorntonville had an increase of 184% at $7,300 compared to $2,500 last December. But Thorntonville is still down for the year by 25%, with a total of $58,000 compared to $78,000. Wickett also had strong receipts for the month, with an increase of 110%, with $21,000 compared to $10,000 last year. For the year, Wickett had received $241,000 compared to $323,000 last year, a drop of 25%. Besides Grand Falls, Crane is the only entity of the 18 tracked the ends of the year with a higher total than last year. Crane received $86,000, up from last December by 3%. Receipts for the year in Crane were $973,000, up by 6.6% over last year's total of $913,000. Monahans, Andrews, Fort Stockton, and Ira Ann all assess a sales tax rate of 2%. Pecos, Crane, Balmoray, and Toya assess 1.5%. The City of Midland assesses 1.25%, and tax rate for Kermit and Wink is 1.0%. County rates for Midland and Winkler counties are 0.5%. Texas Comptroller Glenn Hager sent cities, counties, transit systems, and special purpose taxing districts $936 million in local sales tax allocations for December, which is 18.4% more than in December of 2020. The allocations are based on sales made in October by businesses that report tax monthly. Brooks booked for hitting female and threatening her with knife. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Johnny Lee Brooks, age 56, of Monahans, was arrested on December 13th on a charge of aggravated assault with a weapon, a second-degree felony. According to Captain Christopher Quintana of the Monahans Police Department, Sergeant Xavier Ramon was dispatched to 1102 North Carroll Street at 3:55 p.m. on a disturbance call. When Ramon arrived, the female victim said Brooks had assaulted her by hitting her in the face and threatened her with a knife. Brooks was still present at the scene and was arrested and booked into Ward County Jail on the assault charge, Quintana said. If convicted, Brooks could be sentenced to 2 to 20 years in jail and a fine of $10,000. He posted bond of $30,000 and was released. Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, December 16th. no vaccine mandate for hospital workers. Raises on tap for all WMH employees. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The coronavirus vaccine mandate has been put on hold for employees of Ward Memorial Hospital, CEO Leticia Rodriguez told the Board of Managers in last Thursday's meeting. Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order that stated in part, quote, no entity in Texas can compel receipt of a COVID-19 vaccine by an individual, including an employee or a consumer, end quote. Quote, the policy is in place in case we have to implement it, Rodriguez said. The managers approved a pay raise for all employees, which will be effective on January 1, 2022. Rodriguez said the hospital had received $438,000 as part of the American Rescue Plan from the Health Resources and Services Administration and recommended the money be allocated for the pay raises. Quote, we need to stay competitive to help with employee retention, she said. Full-time employees will receive $1.20 raise per hour and 60 cents an hour for part-time employees. Cost of living raises are not affected. Managers present for the meeting were Tommy Escamilla, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, Lisa Stewart, Jeff Burdick, and Gerald Carlson. Managers Dr. Fawcett and Larry Hunt were not present. The managers also authorized Rodriguez to apply for a $4.1 million FMH Florence Marie Hall grant. The application was due on December 15th. One of the requirements is that every board member must contribute to the program, but any amount is acceptable. The grant, if approved, would be used for renovation of patient rooms to make the bathrooms ADA compliant and modernized. Rodriguez said that a $1 million USDA grant had also been applied for. Payment of bills totaling $943,000 was approved unanimously, as presented by Comptroller Belinda Hinojosa. In routine business, minutes of the November 18th meeting were approved. The next meeting will be held at 6:15 p.m. on December 21st at the Physical Therapy Clinic at 420 South Ike Street. Citi partners with WTO for utility payment assistance. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The City of Monahan's council members approved an agreement with West Texas Opportunities, WTO, to provide emergency water services assistance to low-income families. City Manager Rex Thee explained, quote, WTO is wanting to use some grant funds received from the Low-Income Household Water Assistance Program to help low-income families with assistance paying their water bills, end quote. The agreement will allow the city and WTO to work together in assisting the families with help with their water bill. Quote, WTO will bring the city information on persons who have applied to them for services. At that time, the city will suspend any late fees or disconnection due to non-payment until application is processed, Thee said. It's a great program and will benefit citizens in this time of need and will benefit the city with less disconnections, he added. Anyone wanting to apply for assistance will need to contact WTO. In other business, Mayor Adam Steen presented city employees with annual service awards and monetary stipends equal to $15 for each year of service provided. Municipal Court Judge Lori Asbury was recognized for 35 years of service. Permit Clerk Leticia Alamanza and Cemetery Supervisor Daniel Hernandez were both recognized for 15 years of service. Accepting awards for 10 years of service was Police Lieutenant Stormy Laws. Police Chief Billy Riley was recognized for 5 years on the job. The city also named 5 safety awards for 2021. All recipients received a $100 check and a plaque. In other actionable items, no action was taken on the possible redistricting of single-member councilmember election districts. The possible redistricting is mandated by potential population changes as the result of the 2020 census. Quote, "We have a demographer currently working on collecting that data, but it has not been completed as of today," Thee said. Redistricting will depend on a maximum 10% deviation of population from the smallest single-member district to the largest single-member district. If there is a 10% deviation or more, the city will need to redistrict. If there is not, then no action will be needed. Thee said he expects to have the information needed to act on the redistricting by the next council meeting on December 28th. In regular business, the November accounts payable were approved by the council, totaling $878,000. Along with Steen and Thee, council members Jeppy Wilson, Calvin Carroll, Ivy Valenzuela, and Rudy Hernandez were present for the meeting, along with City Attorney Alan Nicholas. Councilmember Richard Hawkins was absent. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, December 28th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall at 112 West 2nd Street. Pizza Hut employee assaulted for messing up on pizza. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man was arrested after he was accused for assaulting a Pizza Hut staff member last Wednesday. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, "Officers were called to the Pizza Hut location at 501 South Main just before 9:30 p.m. December 8th for a report of a man who entered an unauthorized area of the restaurant and struck an employee," end quote. Officers spoke to the manager on scene, who identified the assailant as Rudy Jr. Bernard, age 46, of 808 East 2nd Street. Quote, "The manager told officers Bernard entered the kitchen area of the restaurant, which is not open to the general public, and hit the male employee in the face," Quintana said. Bernard, who was still on scene when officers arrived, and told officers, quote, "The employee messed up his pizza," end quote. He was subsequently arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail and charged with burglary of a building, a state jail felony. Quote, "Bernard could have been charged with a misdemeanor assault, but was charged with felony burglary because Bernard entered a part of the building which was not open to the public and committed the offense," Quintana added. His bond was set at $5,000, and he was released after posting the bond. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the TDCJ for any term of not more than 2 years or less than 180 days, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Proposed school district boundaries set. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The trustees of the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD approved boundary changes of the 7 school districts based on the 2020 census. With no public comment during the public hearing for changing district boundaries, the trustees voted to make significant changes to all 7 trustee districts. The action was taken in Monday's regular meeting with unanimous approval. According to state statutes, the highest percentage of population in each precinct away from perfect balance from the highest to the lowest cannot exceed 10%. Based on the 2020 census, that differential was over a 48.5% change from the 2010 census. The proposed redistricting would have a maximum deviation of less than 5%. The ideal distribution would have the exact same number of people in each district. Total population within the district was stated at 10,836, which would be an ideal population of 1,548 in each district. MWPISD had hired the law firm of Allison, Bass, and McGee, a firm that specializes in the redistricting process, to study the redistricting requirements. Attorney Stan Reed of the law firm presented the data to the trustees via a video conference during the public hearing prior to the regular meeting on Monday night. Reed acknowledged that the 2020 census was, quote, was not the best census. Many people did not report household census numbers, and the presence of door-to-door census workers was very limited because of COVID, end quote. The redistricting is based on population and not registered voters, Reed said. The maps of school district boundaries are available at the school administration building at 606 South Betty Avenue. Current maps are available, but new maps that show the redistricting boundaries will not be available until early next year. The redistricting will not be finalized until the January meeting, allowing time for notices to be published in the Monahans News. Once ratified, tax assessor-collector Vicki Heflin will mail new voter registration cards to all affected voters. In other actions, the trustees ordered the school trustee election for May 7, 2022. Incumbents are District 2 trustee Raymond Reyes and District 4 trustee Joel Greiner. Filing dates for the school board election is January 19th through February 18th. The last date to register to vote for the trustee election is April 7th. Early election will begin on Tuesday, April 25th, and the last day is May 3rd. All ballots will be cast at the school administration building. Early voting will be available from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and hours on May 7th will be 7 a.m. until 7 p.m. Scott Reed of Park Hill Architects and Planners provided the construction update for Monahans High School. The sheetrock has been installed in the choir room. The auditorium has been dried in. Interior work has started. The concrete has been poured for the swimming pool, and the block work has been started for the cafeteria. Reed also presented the guaranteed maximum price of $18.6 million for the athletic improvements, which was approved by the trustees. Quote, "We pushed out the drawings and got the bids in before the end of the year, before prices go up at the first of the year. We had good bid participation and we got good pricing," end quote. The project duration is estimated to be 20 months from notice to proceed. Included is a new press box, modification of existing bleachers, relocation of press box. Home field stands will be relocated to the west side of Estes Memorial Stadium to eliminate facing the sun. New tennis courts, field house, track are also included. Pavement all most of the athletic complex will also be done. Quote, "With bids lower than expected, we were able to include some ceramic tile and the high school and pull out bleachers for the new swimming pool," Reed said. Enrollment at Monahans High School continues to decline, Superintendent Chad Smith said. Quote, "High school is now below 600, 590. More kids are moving to homeschooling," end quote. Total enrollment for the district is 2,147 students. Enrollment at Monahans Education Center is 21, 356 at Walker Junior High, 467 at Sudirth Elementary, 491 Tatum Elementary, and 222 at Cullender Kindergarten. In routine business, minutes of the regular meeting on November 15th and special meeting on November 29th were approved. Trustees present for the meeting were Quint Melius, Donna Garcia, Raymond Reyes, Nancy Epchurch, and Steve Fine. Trustees Bobby Almanza and Joel Greiner were not present. The next meeting of the trustees will be held on January 17, 2022, at 6:30 p.m. in the School Administration Building at 606 South Betty Street. Barstow EMS Agreement Renewed. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Meeting in regular session on Monday morning, Ward County Commissioners agreed to a renewal of an agreement with Reeves County Emergency Services District No. 2 for continued EMS services in the western part of Ward County, the Barstow area. Ward County EMS cannot service the Barstow area in a timely manner, resulting in Reeves County to provide the service. Cost of the agreement, which will be effective on January 1, 2022, and valid until the end of 2022. The commissioners also agreed to participate in a statewide settlement of opioid litigation. County Judge Greg Holly said, quote, "The Ward County share in the litigation would be $57,920 if the state is awarded, but that would mean that the county would not be able to sue," end quote. Commissioners present for the meeting were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. The outdoor burn ban was renewed for another 90 days because of the current drought conditions. The ban prohibits all outdoor burning in the unincorporated area of the county. The order does not prohibit outdoor burning of trash in containers covered by metal grating, outdoor cooking, or burning in metal pits or grills, or as approved by the Ward County Fire Marshal. The average current drought index for the county is 584 on a scale of 0 to 800, with the higher the number, the worse the drought, Holly explained. The fireworks ban was also renewed. The ban prohibits the sale or use of restricted fireworks in the unincorporated area of the county. Restricted fireworks include skyrockets with sticks and missiles with fins. Permissible fireworks are not banned. There is no public area in the county that allows shooting of fireworks. In routine business, minutes of the November 22nd meeting and county officers' reports were approved. The next meeting of the commissioners will be on December 27th at 9:30 a.m. at the Ward County Courthouse at 400 South Allen Street. Pecos man dies in Saturday crash near Barstow. According to the initial report by Texas Department of Public Safety media officer Justin Baker, Shaden Paul Avila, age 25, of Pecos, died in an accident on Interstate 20 near approximately mile marker 51, 1 mile southwest of Barstow, around 8:50 p.m. on Saturday evening. Avila was driving his 2002 Chevrolet Silverado pickup westbound on IH-20. When, for unknown reasons, Avila struck the guardrail and crossed both westbound lanes and struck the center barrier. The vehicle then rolled to the right, ejecting Avila. Avila was pronounced dead at the scene by Reeves County Justice of the Peace Carrasco. The report noted that Avila was not wearing a seatbelt. Weather conditions were clear and dry at the time of the crash. Investigated by troopers Michelle Montoya, Jose Olguin of Pecos, and Ricardo Flores of Monahans, Reeves County Sheriff's Office, and the fire department assisted in the crash.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.